You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another episode of the Myth TV Cast. I'm Pat DeVillo. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry.
How you doing?
How you been, Dan? It's been 2 weeks.
Yeah, I've been pretty good. Been busy. Been doing lots of stuff. Lots of upgrades. Lots going on.
Time's flying by. The nice weather's coming around. So, you know, we don't want to be locked down in the basement playing around with the computers.
Nope.
Well, it's a beautiful day and the kids want to go outside. So, trying to cut back a little bit, but we're still going to talk about Myth TV. We've got a lot of topics to discuss this week. We've got some interesting things to do. We're going to do a screencast. What we plan on doing is at a certain point during the recording, I'm going to fire up, we're going to actually do a Mythbuntu 904 install into a VirtualBox virtual machine. And then hopefully the screencast will come out okay. And what we'll do is we'll release that as a separate video file so that people can listen to what we're doing. And then if they'd like, they can stop their audio or listen to their audio and watch what we're doing at the same time. The nice thing about what I'm using to do the screencast is I have this audio that we're talking right now piping into it. So even if you just watch the screencast, you'll hear us talking about what we're doing.
And it'll be exactly the same.
It'll be exactly the same as the audio that we're talking about here. So just to go over some things that we've got a whole bunch of emails from a lot of different people.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of great feedback from people.
Yeah, the last few weeks has been great. I just want to give some shout-outs. We got Aaron from New Zealand sent us an email. Thank you, Aaron. We got Nick from the UK. Thank you, Nick. Rogue Spear, thank you. Andy had a question. He's like, Pat, are you happy with Linhas? Overall, I've been pretty happy with it, Andy. I can't complain. It's still technically beta software, but I've been using it steady as my main myth box for a couple months now, and I've been pretty happy with it. In fact, you know, they've been fixing little things here and there, but overall, I've been very satisfied with it. Cecil and his team have done a great job with it. So two thumbs up for Linhas. I think I'm probably going to do like a review at some point in the future. Or maybe we could do a screencast. We'll try to do an install again if this works out okay. Who else? Patrick Archibald sent us an email saying, great job, guys. We appreciate it, Patrick. And also Cafe Ninja, who I talk to every so often on IRC. He sent us an email, too. He had a couple different points. One of the things that Cafe Ninja was saying was keep the OGG format. I don't know if I mentioned it the last episode, or if we just talked about it. Some people have been saying that they're unhappy that I'm only providing an OGG feed of the show. There's a couple different reasons why I'm doing that. One is I'm lazy and I want to keep my work down to a minimum. Yeah, I know it's not all that much work to re-encode a file. And some other people have been requesting that I do an iTunes feed. If anybody who knows me from the tech show or any other podcast that I've been on, you'll know that I hate Apple. Okay,
I'm right there with you.
And I don't think people should be using iTunes. If iTunes is like the one application that keeps someone from switching to Linux completely, then anything I can do to eliminate iTunes usage is a win for everybody. So I'm not going to contribute to that monster. If people insist on using iTunes, that's their prerogative. I suggest they use one of the other great RSS podcast catchers out there that are available in Linux. There's plenty of them out there.
The tech show is not on iTunes, right?
Actually, no. We do have an iTunes.
Oh, you do have one on iTunes.
That's okay, Dan Washko. Okay. So people can send their hate mail to Dan at thelinuxlink.net. It's shocking, though. There's a lot of people that use the iTunes feed. But I'm not going to contribute to that. And also, you know, I think OGG is a superior audio format, in my opinion.
Me too.
And most audio players these days support OGG, believe it or not. And I know people who have iPods, they say, why doesn't support OGG? You know what? That hardware does support OGG, but Apple doesn't want you to use OGG.
Nope, they want you to use their proprietary AAC
or
DRM. They put DRM into anything you import into iTunes. Yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah. So what I tell people is most audio management software in Linux, either Rhythmbox or Amarok.
Exhale.
Yeah, there's so many different ones. What it'll do is if you have like an iPod of some sort and you manage it through that software, if you have an OGG file, that software will automatically re-encode that file to MP3. Yeah, so it's that hard.
Yeah. If you're using it, just use the tool for what it does.
Right? Yeah, the only reason why I only want to do OGG is Dan Washka from the Linux Link Tech Show, you know, my co-host over there, he's nice enough to let us use the Tech Show server to host our files, the archive server. And again, thanks to Dan for letting us do that. And I don't want to be able to put two files on there for the same program, the same episode. You know, the OGG sounds great, man. Stick with the OGG. You'll be happy in the long run. And that's the end of that. So if anybody wants to set up, you know, take our OGG audio and re-encode it to MPEG-3 or AAC and do an iTunes feed, you're more than welcome to. Just let us know that you're doing it, and we'll happily put the button on the website if you want to do that.
Exactly.
Okay. Back to the emails. I want to talk about a couple other emails besides the ones I just mentioned. Let's see. Peter sent us an email. He said, my first Myth TV combo box. And he says, I just wanted to thank you for a wonderful, for me, timely podcast. I've been wanting to do a Myth TV box for a long time, and I think I will be taking the plunge soon. I would have posted this to the forums, but alas, the forum registration is not secure. Again, that's Dan Washko. Dan at the Linux Link Tech Show. I haven't had any problems with the forum. I've been an admin on the Tech Show forum for a few years now, and we run a pretty tight ship over there. Dan has this thing where an email has to be sent to the admins, and we have to check the actual request for the register, and we have to do the approval for it. And for the most part, most people, you know, most spammers won't take the time to answer the silly question that we have on there. So, you know, it's pretty low. And one or two occasions that a spammer has actually gone in there, because you're using a real person to do the question or whatnot, we figure it out pretty quickly, and we shut it down and we delete them and we ban them. So it's not too big of a deal. But anyhow, back to the question.
So join it up so you can participate exactly. In the community.
Exactly. go to our website, check out the forum. You know, we're trying to get some people in there, put some questions on it, discussion points, you know, talk about the episodes. By all means, do that. Okay, let's get back to Peter's email. He goes, right now I only have standard FTVs, one 7-inch under a cabinet, 120-inch, and one 32-inch. Well, that's actually three TVs, but okay. I will record. He doesn't mention. He says he only has standard F. He doesn't say how many. I will be recording off my analog cable with some local DTV content thrown in. I would like to build an all-in-one MythBox back and front end that is fairly silent and has composite output. I plan on adding additional front end boxes in the future, hacked Xbox, NVPMC, or something else like the Popcorn Era. I've put together two configurations, and he's gave us some links, an Atom 330 base system and an AMD base system. My assumption is the AMD base system is going to be his back end, his main box.
Yeah.
And the Atom is going to be just a front end for somewhere. Mm-hmm. Couple of questions. Can either of these configurations provide enough processing power to record one or two programs while playing back one or two streams? Yeah, that should be able to do that. My setup upstairs, I've had situations where I'm recording a high def program over the cam card, I'm recording a standard def program through the cable box, and I'm watching a Hulu video at the same time.
I've done similar where I've watched like the Flyers play in live real time and no hiccups whatsoever, and record two other programs at the same time, one high def, one standard def, and then when that hour switched, one of those began commercial flagging and started recording two more things on the same two channels, on the same two capture cards, and I did not notice one hiccup whatsoever.
Right. The main thing is if you go by like what our figure is the minimum these days, you know, dual core 2.0, 2 gigahertz,
mm-hmm.
I think you're safe.
Yeah.
You'll be able to do that. The only other thing is as far as your network setup in your home, if you're doing wireless or if you're doing, you know, wired mm-hmm. connection, obviously wired is faster.
Definitely.
If you're going to be pushing high def content over your home network, you need a wired connection.
Exactly.
You know, it'll
gigabit switches are cheap. I picked one up for $37 off of eBay. Yeah. So yeah. And most onboard, you know, NIC cards now support at least one, if not, you know, if it has two, if not both, gigabit, you know, Ethernet, and the cards themselves are cheap. They're like another $20 if you want to drop in a card.
If you're going to be doing just standard def only, you can do wireless. Mm-hmm. I've done it with I have a Hapag Media MVP, one of those little embedded boxes. I had that up in the guest bedroom. I'm going over wireless and it was working. You know, I was able to watch standard def recorded programs, no problem. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as like the Atom based systems, I'm not sure.
The only experience I have with it is in a netbook, and there are times when it really seems to chug along, especially when it first comes up and you want to launch like Firefox.
Yeah,
I don't think you can make that
as your main myth box, mm-hmm. but if you just make that like a front end, I'm sure you're fine just to watch something.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe instead of even that Atom processor, you know, that one base, look at one of like the NVIDIA Ions that are, you know, just a little, you know, what is it, a mini ITX box. Acer has one coming out very shortly.
The Acer one, I think that's out that I've seen. I think it's only a single core.
Is it?
I don't know how fast it is. But I recommend people who are thinking about picking up one of those little Atom-based machines is just hold off a little bit until you know, people report back either on the Myth users mailing list or the Not Myth forum or the Myth Ubuntu forum. Just listen to see what people say.
And or if you do decide to take the plunge and do that, make sure you provide the rest of us the feedback.
Exactly.
so that we can take advantage of that
and,
as well.
And provide feedback and let everybody else know how it is. You know, sharing information is key. And that's one of the great things about the Linux community in general is people are willing to share information.
Exactly.
And document it. Documentation is key. You know, everybody mm-hmm. wants to code and hack and do all this cool stuff, but you got to document it because, you know, somebody, the next schlub that's going to come along, you know, do you want him spending 20 hours pulling his hair out, mm-hmm. you know, knocking his head against the wall?
We've been there. We've all been there.
So. I know. Make it easier. Just take some notes, you know, either post a how-to on a forum, on your blog or somewhere. And people will find it.
And our forums are a great place to do that. So by all means.
Yeah, yeah. Or any of
the... We can get it back to the Myth TV wiki as well if you want to.
That's a great place mm-hmm. to do it too. Wikis are fantastic mm-hmm. for that kind of thing. And I'm sure they're more than willing to let you do that there. And then let me see. His other question is, can the Atom-based mini ITX motherboard fit into a micro ATX case? Or do I need to get a mini ITX case? Not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Yeah,
I'd have to look at the case specs to see if it supports any of the other.
I think mini is bigger, is the bigger one. Micro is the smaller one.
Yeah.
So you can fit a micro into a mini, not the other way around.
Right.
So.
But they're kind of specialized too. I don't know that you're gonna find. I think you have to go to more like specialty type sites to pick up some of those types of cases and whatnot. I mean, they may be coming more prevalent, but I haven't. It's been a long time since I checked for a small little embedded box like that.
You know, I have the popcorn arrow down here, and mm-hmm. I like it for what it is. You know, I can watch my Myth recordings over the network because mm-hmm. you know I can't access my Myth recordings, but I can't get all the full featured functionality of Myth, the full Myth setup. Mm-hmm. I don't get the commercial skipping. You know,
right.
I can't go in and do my menu, my scheduling of my shows. Mm-hmm. I can't delete recordings and. Honestly, I'm really leaning towards building a small form factor box or buying one of these NVIDIA Ion-based platform boxes that are coming out. And
I think their prices are going to come down, too, to the same price point as the netbooks will. And
that'd be sweet. Yeah. I mean, I think the sweet spot is around $200.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If you can get like a you know, something equivalent to like a Mac Mini-type form factor,
right.
That's... got everything in there, including, you know, the video and everything.
System 76 makes a small box that's just like that.
I don't even know what they go for.
I think they were like about $500.
That's kind of expensive.
Yeah, just for a front-end piece, yeah.
They seem pretty reasonably priced, so I would wait a little bit and see what other companies release them. Acer's got that one. I'm supposedly they're releasing some more.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few other companies that are going to be releasing some, so that's something to keep an eye on. And I think, no pun intended, I'm going to keep a watchful eye on that whole situation with the NVIDIA boxes, and I'll probably pick one up at some point because, you know, while the popcorn arrow is a nice little box, I really want a full setup for another front end down here. You know, mm-hmm. I want to be able to get the commercial skipping and everything.
Right, me too.
Do you have one set up at home, or do you have a second box?
That's going to be one of the next things that I'm gonna build is either something for the sunroom or up in the bedroom. I don't know how much more life we're going to get out of that TiVo that's up there, so we might just switch to something that's Myth-based or whatever.
Yeah, currently my setup down here is I have my main Myth box, which is in the family room, which is connected to the standard FTV, and then down here in the basement, to the high def TV, I have the popcorn hour hooked up. Now, up in the guest room, I have the Hot Pog Media MVP. I don't have it hooked up right now because I just, you know, not too long ago, I set up Blindhouse. So I have to go and set up the configuration for the Media MVP to do that. But I did have it previously, and it works okay. You know, you can go in there and watch your shows over the network. You know, it's not 100% full-featured Myth setup, but it's like at least 75%, I'd say, which is better than what the Popcorn Hour gives you.
My issue is going to be with getting connectivity up there. That's what.
Yeah.
So I can't get a wired connection. I do run a power line network, which, yeah, I think I.
Do you have an alarm system or anything?
I do, but it's not hooked up anymore.
So. Yeah. The alarm system guys, they're pretty good at snaking cables. You could probably piggyback on one of those lines that they have running up.
Mm-hmm.
If I set up like home networking upstairs at some point when the kids are older, I know there's a line going up from the main floor here going up into the attic.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a control pad in my bedroom for the alarm system in my house, so I could probably follow that, pop it up to the attic and down to, you know, the kids' rooms at some point.
I've tried to fish them, but my house, I don't know what the hell is in my house. But every time I get past one roadblock, another one's like right there waiting for me. So I've been up in that crawl space trying to get things down.
Is it an old place?
No, it's new. It's only about what, 6 years old now, 7 years old.
It's brand new.
Yeah, but there's no real straight shot down anywhere. It's always I was up there fishing one day for a couple hours, and I couldn't get by
doing
it,
cables so. is a bitch, man.
I was ready to puncture a hole in the radon tube and just drop it down.
You know, I finished
this, I didn't though.
I finished this basement 2 years ago, and when I was smart enough to lay coaxial cable down here, so that when I switched to, when I get the cable setup done, the guy had a really easy time. He just had to terminate the connections and hook it up. Okay, and I do have network cable going over there from where my server is to the other side of the room.
Right.
What I didn't do was lay the cable going upstairs.
Going upstairs, yeah.
I didn't think, because that's where the Myth Box is. Yeah. So luckily, I was able to do it. I have, if you look over here, you see up on the ceiling there?
Yep.
Above the TV?
There's a panel there.
The access panel.
Yeah.
And straight below that, behind where I have the AV rack next to the TV, there's another panel.
Okay.
So what I was able to do was upstairs, pull the carpet up, drill a hole in the corner of the room, you know, quarter-size hole.
Right. Enough to fit a
put the cable down, and then open up the access panels, and I was able to put enough cable down, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 feet down.
Yeah.
And hook it with a coat hanger.
Oh, there
opened
you go.
Up coat hanger. pulled it into the first access panel. Mm. Pulled it down, and then opened up the bottom one, then dropped it down to the second one.
Okay.
So, I mean, I did it at the time, I got a few cuts on my hands, nothing too crazy
you know,
from sticking my arm behind the wall and there's nails and stuff sticking through. So, but I was able to do it, so I was pretty happy. So going up to the Myth Box, it is a wired connection, and it's very noticeable, the speed difference. When you're doing like videos and stuff, like archive stuff, you know, Xvids and home videos that I have sitting on my server, it's pretty seamless now. Mm-hmm. It's fast. So, yeah, if you really want a fast connection, man, you really need to do a wired connection.
Right.
That's just my opinion.
And
you're doing high def, you have to.
Mm-hmm. I picked the right gigabit switch too when I put it in my house, because everything from my server to the Myth TV and whatnot, they all of that runs gigabit back there. But it did have one dedicated 10/100 port on it that it, you know, kind of keeps it separate from the gigabit traffic that's going through there, and doesn't slow that traffic down. And I'm able to bridge into the power line network, and that actually works really, really well for my setup that I have.
That's becoming more prevalent, what you describe. I don't know about the rest of the world, but here in the States, that's been on and off, on again thing for years.
It's worked for me though. I've had no issues with. I had a time there where there's a small transformer behind my house. It was interfering with my wireless.
Yeah, that's the big question.
I couldn't make a wireless connection whatsoever, even to any of my neighbors that have open connections. None of my machines could make a wireless connection. So I said, screw it. I was in college doing my grad work at the time. I needed to get on the internet, and because I was doing my grad from home and, you know, on the internet, and I was able to get this up in place and up and running, and it's been working great ever since. So
that's cool. At least you got it working.
Yeah.
That's cool. And then we also had another email. This was from Rick. And Rick says, thanks for doing the MythCast. It's been helpful in putting together my first system. My first attempt was made with a P3 866 megahertz, 320 meg RAM, 40 gig hard drive, PVR 150, and a GeForce MX 4000 running Not Myth 5.5. According to the Myth TV site, the system should let me record and watch live TV, but not at the same time. This is true. This was a bit of a stuttering from time to time. The next system I use is a Dell 330 workstation, a huge piece. It's a P4, 1.5 megahertz, 512 of RAM. This worked very well for standard def, which is what I wanted. No stuttering at all. No problems watching live TV while recording. Okay, and then he says, I took several attempts to learn how to set up the capture card, video source, etc., but it only took about 30 minutes once you know the particulars of your system. That's true. A lot of times you get, like, new people have never done a MIT TV install, and they get lost. They get hung up on the little things. And I remember the first time I did it, I had no idea. So what is really recommended is you go and read documentation and how-tos.
Read as much as you can.
Yeah, and hopefully the screencast that we're going to do here will help you. You'll get to see the actual screens and what the hell to put into the different lines.
Right, right.
Hopefully that's helpful. Okay. And then he says, the only remaining thing to get working is a serial IR blaster with the Dish Network 2700 set-top box. Here are some tips I'd like to pass along. Set up an account at Schedules Direct first. Pay for 2 months, it's cheap. Edit the channels to match your program package if using satellite. This makes the program guide quicker. Write down the user ID and the password. You'll need it later. Yeah, that's one thing we're going to talk about. If you're in North America, States, Canada, I think in the Caribbean too, I'm not sure about Mexico, you're going to need Schedules Direct to do your program guide information. So you'll need to go to the Schedules Direct website, register there. I think they have a free trial for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think so.
So you don't even have to pay to try it out. And it's pretty cheap. For a year, it's $20. In fact, I just got my email that I have to re-up in
June. Me too. Mine's up in June. So
yeah.
I got to do mine again.
Yeah. So definitely before you do anything, you want to go to Schedules Direct and register. For people in Europe and Australia and other places around the world, they have their own system, and they don't need to pay Schedules Direct to do that. Okay. So number two, he says, make sure the PC is connected to the internet before the install. Use a live CD like Slax to test it. NotMyth will need to get updates. The program guide is downloaded and setting up the weather plugin needs the internet to work. Get good cables. I had a black and white image until I changed the video cable. Pass the word, please. Don't hurry. Do the install and you will not, so that you will not be disturbed. Yeah, if you have like screaming kids, wait till the kids are in bed.
Exactly.
We can appreciate that. What else? Make sure the program guide works. If your program listings aren't working, you'll get lots of no title entries. Connect the cables to the TV last. Thanks, Rick. Rick, very good points. Thanks for sharing this. We'll pass this along to our listeners. And we appreciate you sending tips to everybody. And people, if you have any more tips, please send them to us. Either email us or post on the forum. And,
that's right.
That'll be a cool thing. Alrighty, now I think we're gonna fire up VirtualBox and we're gonna install MythBuntu into VirtualBox. And I'm gonna do a screencast here too. So let me just fire this up. Okay, we got the screen.
While you're doing that, I did get one other email too. Also, I wanted to mention that. Let me bring it up here real quick. One of the guys was asking about if we're ever going to look at anything like Boxy
Oh yeah, I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, or XBMC or anything like that. I don't have any extra hardware lying around to kind of just throw
these
all in. So is
that a plea for people to send you?
Well, hey, no, if they want to, go by all means, go right ahead and send me. But I will try them out in VirtualBox and maybe give some pointers and maybe even see about hooking them up to my Myth TV setup that I have right now. So I will try that when I get some time. But like Pat said a couple of times now, we both have small kids, so
yeah.
time's a little short.
Exactly. you do what you can. Okay, I have VirtualBox fired up here.
Okay.
Okay, and this is running off the live CD, which is kind of similar to what you do with a regular Ubuntu install. You get the CD in there. It'll bring up the system up and you'll have like a live system that you can play.
You're in a regular XFCE, the regular XFCE interface with a few options that's presented there, one of which is install.
Right. So you can go in, you can look at it. Okay, that's what we're going to do right now. We're going to do the install. Is this it? Let me see. Install.
The one nice thing about this live CD is that it can also run as a front end. So if you do have another machine set up somewhere and you do have a dedicated Myth back end somewhere running publicly on the network, which that's one of the things that we'll talk about then, it can just connect to it as running off of the CD. You don't even necessarily need to have a hard drive in that machine. You can just stick the CD in, reboot it, it'll jump onto the network, and you're good to go.
Okay, here's the Mythbuntu install. It's asking you for our language. We're going to say English, okay, because that's what we speak.
And a lot of this installer is just what you would see in any distribution. Yeah, any distribution really kind of has very similar type of initial first steps.
Okay, time zone, we're Eastern time zone, United States. It's going to be a little slower because we're running in VirtualBox here. Okay, keyboard in the United States. We're going to hit forward.
And I recently went through this on my own machine. I have a post in the forum about it. This whole process took me 8 minutes. From the time I stuck the CD in and powered it on till the time that I actually rebooted it to the first time was 8 minutes.
Okay, so, now it's asking for us to partition the hard drive. We're going to use the whole VirtualBox hard drive. I think I have set up a 12 gig.
Yeah, it looks like 12 gigs.
Which is enough for just this testing purposes. For real system, obviously, you want a big honking hard drive. I posted in the forum a link to a special. I think it was like a one-day special for like a 1 terabyte drive for like $65.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that in there. That's nice.
Okay. What is your name? This is like really standard Ubuntu type stuff. We're going to create a user. We're going to say Mythcast. Okay. Choose a password.
Yeah. In this process, don't use MythTV. Because there are you know, it's going to create a MythTV account.
You get confused.
Yeah, it'll create a MythTV account, and it will
your regular username that you might use.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, it's asking for a password.
We're naming it. We're going to tell it to log in automatically.
We're going to call it the VirtualBox Myth VirtualBox. How's that? VBox.
Sounds good.
Log in automatically. Yeah, I think we're going to watch it because it's a MythBox. Choose another password. Doesn't like my password. We're going to damn the torpedoes we're going through. This is just a testing instead of a virtual machine. Okay, now it's asking us, we're at a screen that says installation type. You got primary backend front end. Most people are going to use that. Secondary backend with a front end. This is for somebody who has a secondary machine doing recordings, and they might use it for commercial flagging so that they can offload it.
Right.
Primary backend, if it's just a server that's doing recording. A secondary backend system, and then there's a front-end only option. This is actually a very nice setup that Mythbuntu has. I really like this.
Right.
99% of the time, you're going to do a primary backend with a front-end. If you were going to do just like a, like, you know, what we discussed earlier in the email about doing like a front-end system, then you would do just a front-end type setup. The front-end is nice because it's much smaller install base,
mm-hmm.
and it only gives you like the GUIs. You won't get the database stuff in there.
Right. You don't need any of that stuff.
You don't
stuff.
Need the capture card stuff in there. Mm-mm. But for this purposes, we're going to do a primary back-end with a front-end. You know, we're considering this like a primary system. Okay, now it's going to ask us for additional services to choose. We see SSH checked off, Samba checked off. NFS is not checked off. MythTV service is not checked off. Okay, it says, if you will be using a remote front end back end, you'll need to enable MythTV on your Ethernet interface. So basically, if you plan on doing having other remote front ends, you're going to need the MythTV service thing checked off. As far as Samba and NFS, if you're going to want to share out your recordings and what you got on your MythBox, music and whatnot, and to Windows machines, you're going to want Samba checked off. If you just have like either a Linux only or a Linux and some kind of Unix variant, say BSD or OS X or whatever, you can do NFS. Me personally, I have Linux only running here. I use NFS. I'm going to uncheck Samba and I'm going to go with NFS.
There you go. And now, MythTV service, I believe most of what it does is with the MySQL database. So it's going to allow the user to actually get access to the database on the IP address of the machine.
Right.
So that's what it's going to do. Now, if you go in, you may have to tweak this a little bit after the fact. If you go in and say set a static IP
address. You can always change this stuff after the fact, so you're not locked in.
Yeah.
If you're just going to be doing like a front-end back-end combined system, I would leave it off personally.
Right. I think this also enables like the universal plug-and-play server, because if that is set up by default to localhost, it actually just shuts it off. It needs to have a physical, a static IP address there as well.
Here's one thing that trips a lot of people up: IR remotes and transmitters. In this screen here, it's asking if you want that. But we're going to want to enable a remote. Let's see. I'm going to check that off. And then there's a whole selection of what you can use. Wow, this is pretty nice. They have a nice selection of devices that you can
pick
off.
There are a lot of them in there.
I see a whole bunch of stuff I've never even heard of. Wow, look at that.
That list just keeps going.
That's a huge list.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little kludgy going through the screencast thing here. We're going to go with the Windows Media Center remotes. Highly recommended. Mm-hmm. That's what I got. I'm going
to
check that out.
If you can find them. I guess they're getting kind of hard to find nowadays.
Yeah, it seems they're not making them anymore, and the supplies are drying up. So if you want to want to build a MythBox anytime soon, I'd go and buy one, and even if it just sits on the shelf for a year.
Right.
You got it because it's really well supported, and it literally works out of the box. You just did one of these installs with Mothbuntu, and did it work immediately?
I haven't had a single issue with my remote control.
You see, with Mothbuntu, it asks you if you want to enable it. I've done Linhouse recently, and the Linhouse didn't even ask me, man. It just started working out of the box. So.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. For this purpose, we're going to want to enable the IR receiver, too. Here we go. See, it's a little kludgy. It's like I'm futzing around here with the screencast thing.
Mouse driver and VirtualBox, right?
Yeah. Here we go. There we go. Now it's going to ask us for the remote. DirecTV receiver. Wow. If you got DirecTV, there you go.
It supports quite a few.
So this is really asking you, what kind of transmitter you want to do for IR blasting. I see it's got a whole bunch of stuff on it, Motorola cable box. I guess this is for the mappings, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, here's the PVR 150, but there's multiple ones. So one's for DirecTV,
you can do combinations.
One's for Dish, one's for Motorola.
This is real nice. They've done a real bang-up job to the Mothbuntu people. It's, if you don't know what you're doing, it could be a little confusing. Yeah, look at all the support stuff they got. They got so much stuff in here. Okay, what do I want to do? We're going to do the USB, and I'm going to do a Motorola cable box, because that's what I got, so we'll go with that. Okay, it's firing up the hard drive. We got the little spinning clock. It's going in, doing some configuration. It says, ready to install. Your new operating system will now be installed with the following settings. It shows us our login name. It's showing some of the devices that we've picked off, the remote, the IR blaster. Okay, let's do it. And away we go. It's doing the partitioning. It's installing the system. It's going pretty quick.
Yeah. they did a really nice job with the interface for Mothbuntu. I've been running Mothbuntu for quite some time now, and I've been really happy with it. I've ran into some issues lately, and I can talk about those after we're done here.
I see it's doing an XFS partition. I guess that's for the recordings.
Yeah, it will put an XFS in for var lib, I believe, and then everything else, which is just the base system, I think is in, at least in mine, was like, I don't know, 18 gigabytes or something like that, or 10 gigabytes. It was very small for the root file system.
Well, I hope I got enough here. I got 12 gig. I'm going to feel stupid if it tells us we're running out of space.
I'm trying to think what mine, I can tell real quick. I'm logged into it.
Oh, you're logged in from here to your MythBox
over
the internet. Hopefully you have a password protected.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Actually, the Mothbuntu setup is really nice. It's got a command console where it has all the services. After you have everything all installed on the system, you can turn on and turn off services and remove stuff and add stuff. It's pretty impressive what they've done. They've done a nice thing. Mothbuntu uses XFCE as the desktop, which is obviously it's much lighter than GNOME or KDE. Most Myth-specific Linux distributions will have a lighter desktop manager. Linhouse has got Fluxbox, and I think with Medora you can pick what you want.
The root file system's 12 gigabytes on that. Maybe it just won't create a var lib partition on its own.
We'll find out very soon. Normally when I do virtual machines, I keep them pretty small.
Me too.
10 gig.
Yeah,
usually.
Yeah. Let them grow when they need to.
Yeah, I'm doing this off of my laptop, which has got like a 180 gig hard drive. So I've got a few virtual machines in there. So it's copying the files over now. The system says it's about 34%. Copying. So you say you did this in 8 minutes?
I did from the time I inserted the CD till the time I rebooted was 8 minutes. So, but again, my desktop or my Mothbuntu machine, the dedicated machine, is very powerful. So 4 gigs of RAM, you know dual core 64
for this FX virtual box 64. Session I have it as 512 meg of RAM.
Yeah, so it flew by. It went really. I did have an issue when I was going through this process, though, that I could not get XFCE using the NV driver to install or to bring up a resolution that I could see on the screen. I actually had to pull my LCD monitor off of my desktop system, and
well, that's annoying.
Sit it there, and I could get it to install that way. Once everything was done, all my configuration when I was done, I just popped in the DVI connection on the card. Recycled it and everything came up fine. So I don't know what it was with it. Was until I got the NVIDIA driver in place that I needed to be able to or that I could run it on the high definition TV.
Now, this when I was running with Ubuntu, I had something somewhat similar to that. This is when I was running like 804. Mm-hmm. So this is like a year ago. I remember for some reason with the NVIDIA driver, it wasn't like I would set it up. And I would shut the machine down, bring it back up, and then it would ask me to set it up again. This happened for like a few weeks, and then
I recall something like that.
It
too,
was some kind of a bug in the setup.
It got resolved pretty quickly.
I think. They patched it and they released an updated package. And once they did the update, it picked it up, and that was that. Yeah. So before you're gonna do install, you wanna like the email that we read off there. Definitely get a Schedules Direct account, even if it's just a freebie. Just so that you have an ID and password, because once we get into the MITTV setup, we're going to need to do that, because it's what it's going to do. It's going to see, okay, when you go in, you get to the Schedules Direct account. You go in, you say, okay, I live in this area. This is how I watch TV, satellite, cable, over the air, whatever. You can have multiple profiles set up.
Right. There are all kinds of options in there.
Yeah, and it's pretty up to date. They try to keep everything up to date with Schedules Direct. And what it is they aggregate all the information. They've went out and they've done a contract with the Zaptoid people, so that they can sell it to us, the end users, and reap the benefits of easy configuration and setup and scheduling.
Right.
So we're at 54%. It's a little slow because I'm using the virtual machine and I've only allocated so much resources to it. If this was a real install, it would be going much quicker than this, I would think. Mm-hmm. So... what are some of the other thoughts that you have of the Mythbuntu setup that you just did?
Well, I learned a few things that I was previously unaware of. For instance, I used to run XVMC, which is X Video Motion Compensation, on my cards, on my NVIDIA card in there. Now, I just recently purchased an 8400 series card for that box and found out that from 7000 series on, they no longer support the X Video Motion Compensation. I assume that's going to be replaced with VDPAU once that becomes more prevalent, but right now I can't take advantage of the video motion compensation in there.
So everything's on the CPU basically.
Everything's on the CPU. However, though, I can record two shows and they flag commercials on the fly at the same time, and I never seem to go above 100% CPU. And I know that's going to sound weird, but between my two cores, I never go above 100%. And normally I can get that thing going up, 200 or 250%, something like that. But that's just how Top is recording it. If you hit the one button when you're inside of Top, it'll actually show you the amount on each processor. Roughly each one is about 50% or so.
That's not too bad. So
no, it's not bad.
You got a beefy system.
Right? Yeah. It can definitely handle it. One annoying thing that I found, and there have been quite a few posts about it in the forum, in the Mythbuntu forum, is that I can no longer get surround sound working out of it. There, for some reason, there's something with the, I don't know if it's the ALSA configuration or if it's something with just how I configured it, but I've tried numerous methods of setting up ALSA differently to try to get this to work, and I can't seem to get it to pass the DTS or the... what's the other one?
What's this for the optical out that you have?
Yeah, for the optical out that's on there. I'm gonna try. There's a coaxial SPDIF output on the board itself that I think I'm gonna try as well. I don't know. I've never used one of those connections.
So they work.
Do I get a special cable for that or?
No. I think it's just a standard
regular
cable.
Regular. Okay. All right. And I'll
RCA
just try
type cable.
Yeah. So, but right now, that's the only real issue that I have with it, and I, the VDPAU stuff, that's going to come. I can be patient about that. And I've watched a few high definition recordings with the system as it is right now, I haven't noticed an issue with
that's
anything.
Good.
Everything.
Try those X264 files.
I haven't tried any of those yet. I gotta grab a couple of them and throw them on there.
Yeah, they have three of them. Old 720p stuff that's out there.
But DVD backups, you know, they all backup. They all work good. Yeah, the HD recordings all work good.
Well, what do you like to archive to? What format?
Honestly, I do an ISO. Right. I know it takes up a lot more space, but I get all the menuing, I get all the extra features, I get everything.
For my home videos, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. Like if I edit a home video, I create an ISO and I burn a DVD. I'll give the DVD to my mother or family members and stuff.
Yep.
I'll keep the ISO on the server. I use that, and you get all the menu in there.
Exactly. Plus, if somebody wants that, then I can just quick dump it to a DVD for them. So.
Yeah, that's nice. Mastroika is an interesting format. Are you familiar with Mastroika at all?
No.
Mastroika is, I think it's a container. And what it is you could do high def within Mastroika, and it keeps, it's like an ISO file. It'll keep like indexes, chapter indexes, and menuing, and also multi-channel audio. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, it's almost like a pseudo actual DVD file format.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Does something like Zine have...
I think it does have support for that. All the media players...
The menuing and whatnot?
Yeah. Okay. I think it will support Mastroika.
I know MPlayer doesn't quite have all the menuing capabilities, or at least it didn't the last time I checked, for DVDs and whatnot, so...
Right. Yeah, Zine is the one that has all the menu. VLC has actually gotten a lot better with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you just fire up VLC on your Linux box and play it, or your Windows box, whatever, it'll let you go through the DVD menus and select stuff off of that. So, okay, we're chugging along here at 76%. Less than a minute remaining. It's okay. If there's any lags, we'll just cut them out. So once the system is done copying the files over, the system will do a reboot, and then we'll go into the actual MIT-TV setup, and that's where the magic happens.
Yep.
And then what happens is once you get out of the MIT-TV setup, it's going to ask you to populate your scheduling based upon your Schedules Direct profile. And it'll start populating the database from Schedules Direct with all the programming. It usually has, what, 2 weeks of programming?
2 weeks, yep.
Yeah, 2 weeks, which is actually quite a bit. Mm-hmm. That's better than any of the cable company
They give you, what, 3 days, I think it is?
I don't even know. I think it's 3 or 4 days. Yeah. An interesting thing I noticed today is here, the last couple of days have been like thunderstorms rolling through in the afternoons. Before, there was like a lightning strike, and my son was watching TV, and then I hit the guide on the cable box, and like all the guide information was gone.
Yeah, yeah. Not with this. You'll never lose it like that. Unless something physically comes down and strikes that box, which had happened to me before.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's the only one.
I've gotten a little better about that. I've gotten battery backups, which also help regulate the lines. Here, I have that. I have a whole battery setup. I have it over here in my servers. I have battery backups. It helps also regulate the lines. So
and they are great. You plug the USB adapter right into it. APC is at least if it's an APC backups, they are recognized natively by it, and they will actually shut down the machine for you when the battery's running dead. So they actually work great. So
yeah, it's definitely a good thing. If you're gonna have a lot of people are doing that these days, if they have like a home theater type setup, it's definitely worth to protect your equipment. Spend $100, $150, $200, whatever, and get a battery backup system.
You can get one for $40 that lasts for 15 minutes, and if you're just gonna do just that box,
shut everything down.
Throw one of them in there, and you probably aren't plugging much else into it anyway. It shuts my MythBox right down. I put one on my server and on my desktop, and every time it has happened, it shut them down cleanly.
Yeah, my server setup down here. I have a better one that'll give me like an hour or so. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
It keeps my internet connection up, and the server will still stay up.
Right.
And if the power comes back, nobody will notice if they're hitting my server. But
right.
So this is almost done. It's we're at 94%. It's configuring the bootloader. Okay, it's doing the grub thing.
All in all, the process took me about a half a day. That was setting up. Doing the install, setting up the three capture cards that I do have, downloading all of the data, plus any of the updates that were initially needed to come down. And testing them out, but now that the caveat here is that I do have two small children that are running around trying to do this at the same time, so
you gotta wait till they're in bed.
Yeah, if you can wait till they're in bed, then by all means do that. But I kind of did what I could do in between feedings and all that stuff. Playtime. Yeah, diapers. Well, luckily, the one is almost, you know, almost completely done with diapers now. So.
I can't wait to be done with that. My youngest is two, and he still wears a diaper, and I just can't wait for him to be potty trained, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. Here we go. It's saying, okay, the final steps of the installation require setting up your guide and configuring the backend for the first time. It says, click to open the Schedules Direct website. Look at this. They even prompt you to go to the Schedules Direct website for the installer and go register. Very cool.
If you already have an account, you can bypass that.
Yeah. But. So it says, users in North America will need to set up an account with Schedules Direct. Schedules Direct provides guide data for a nominal fee. Without Schedules Direct, North American users may lose many of the scheduling features in MidTV. Yes. This makes life very, 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 very much tolerable. Mm-hmm. If you had to do this manually yourself, it would eat up a lot of time. So to me, you know, for years we had this for free from Zaptoit. Now we pay $20 a year.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, it's not a big deal, especially considering what the hell they charge for TiVo these days.
Exactly.
TiVo, I think, is what, like $12 a month?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, not even 2 months' worth of TiVo guide.
Even if you pay for, like, the yearly or the lifetime subscription, it's still considerably cheaper, I think, over the long run just to pay this $20 a year.
Okay, we're launching the MidTV setup in the virtual machine. Oh, is it spitting out the drive or is it spinning around? I can't tell. This is in my laptop, so.
No, it has to run a process first.
Looks like it's running a script.
Yeah.
I see a little window here. It says MidTV setup real. So it's doing its thing. Okay.
This is actually launching the GUI.
Oh, nice is that. Okay, so this is the main MidTV setup. Mm-hmm. Okay, first things first, general. Let's go into general. Okay. It says local backend IP address 127.0.0.1. This is obviously your local host. If you're going to be doing a standalone machine, you leave this as is.
Right.
Okay. If you're going to be doing multiple front ends, the one back end, what you're going to need to do is you're going to need to put the actual IP address of your main machine in here. So you would put your IP address. Personally, I like to do static IP addressing in my home network. Mm-hmm. It just makes life easier and I can remember anything. Some people like to do the dynamic thing, and I think that's a pain in the ass when you're doing cool things like this.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hit next.
Although, if you do want to share this out to another front end on the network, you will have to set that to something static.
Okay, here it says TV format. It's set at NTSC. Okay.
In the U.S., that's what you want.
That's U.S. standard def. Okay, but there are other options. You could see PAL, NTSC Japan. Some countries have different variants. Mm-hmm. So we're in the States, so we're going to go in NTSC. VBI format. Right now it's set at none. This is for closed captions. So if you want to be able to record closed captions, you would go in and select one of these guys. Channel frequencies. Okay, if you're doing over the air, you would do US broadcasts. Okay, but we're gonna say I'm gonna tie it to my cable setup in Schedules Direct, so I'm gonna say US cable. Your local time zone for XML TV. Use if the XML TV data comes from a different time zone than your own. I don't think we need this.
No.
This is more
this geared. Is only if you're using XML TV, but we're not using
I that. Think they're using that in Europe, right. XML TV.
Are
I
they?
Think that's what they're using. Okay, file management settings, master backend override. Okay, follow symbolic links with deleting files, delete files. I'm going to keep that checked. I think we're okay with just keeping the...
A lot of this stuff you can just leave it as it is.
Yeah, for the most part it should work. Yeah, like EIT transport timeout.
EIT is nice because it can theoretically. I've never had a need for this to take place, but theoretically it should read what the cable provider is sending you over, you know, for the guide data, so you can actually tell the specific channel input to use the EIT data instead of what comes over what comes down from Schedules Direct, so that should it need to update anything on the fly,
right.
it can take that.
Cool. Okay, so I went to the next screen. Okay, it's asking for startup information. If you're going to be doing like a wait kind of thing, you would do like special type stuff in here. We're just going to go with the defaults right now. Okay, master backend, wake attempts 5, slave backends, wake accounts. So right now we're doing this combined system, so we're going to keep that default. Okay, this is all. Keep everything the same.
Yeah, keep everything the same at this point.
Okay, CPU usage low. Well,
one thing you do want to do here is you want to enable the allow user jobs. If you want to do things like exporting your recordings out to some other device like an OKN 800.
Right, if you want that automatically happening after your show's recorded.
Yeah, you need to make sure that these jobs are at least executable so that you can then go in and set them up at a later time.
Right. Now, you could also fire up the MythTV setup and go back in and change
your
settings.
Exactly, exactly.
So that's just something to keep in the back of your mind. Allow commercial detection job. I think you're going to want that. That's very
that's the one.
To me, that's important.
That's the main one thing that you do want.
Okay, it says run jobs on original recording backend. This is more type stuff. It's asking for commercial flag or command. You keep all this stuff the same.
Yep.
Okay, here. You were just talking about the user jobs.
Yep, you can.
If you wanted to have a job to re-encode your video files, you could put it in here, user job one. For now, we're going to keep that blank. Okay, capture cards. Okay, it says new capture card. We're going to go in and say new capture card. We're going to call, okay, it says failed to open. The reason why it failed to open is because we don't actually have a capture device
right
in here. If we did, we would, it would have something. Okay, let me see.
For instance, on this screen, you would see the PVR-150 if it was installed here.
Right, it should auto-detect it. Same thing with the cam. Here we go, here's the pull-down. You'll see different devices in here. What do you want to go with? How about we say it's an IVTV MPEG-2, so it's a PVR-150 card for this setup. Okay, we're going to call it the device. We're going to call it dev.
What is video zero?
It's usually video zero. We'll call it that. Okay, it says failed to open because we don't actually have a capture device in this virtual machine. Okay, it's not going to show anything. So we'll say okay. So now we have a card. Okay, we see it in here, MPEG card. Okay, we're gonna hit escape to get out of the screen. Now we're gonna go to video sources. Okay, we're gonna say new video source. This is where the schedules direct comes into play.
Right.
Okay. It's going and seeing if we have anything set up as far as XML TV. It's not going to find anything, I don't think.
Nope.
And let's see.
I did notice that this runs no matter what you do inside of the screen. So if you
I don't think Linhas has something like this. So you can it's a little quicker. But for this, it's fine. This is actually a nice default theme they give you on MythBone 2. That's pretty nice. It's very, very sleek. Okay, video source name. Okay, we're going to want to put a name in this field. For me, I'm going to say RCN Cable because that's who my cable provider is. So I'm going to say RCN Cable. Okay. It's gonna ask for a user ID and whatnot. I'm just going to put a bogus one in here.
And your user ID is going to be your email address that you use to log in out there.
Yeah, so it's pretty easy to remember. Oh, I spelled that wrong. Okay. And this is the password that we created. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say okay. Okay. And then we could hit retrieve lineups here, but you don't have to.
No, you don't have to.
You don't have to. So we're gonna skip that.
Well, no, actually, on this screen you do have to because it's gonna give you whichever lineups you have created out there because you can have multiple lineups. Like I have a standard def one and I have a high def one created.
All right, so you're gonna want to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay, table frequency table. We're gonna keep that as default. We're gonna hit finish. Okay, now we're gonna hit escape. Now what we're gonna do is we need to tie the capture card to the data coming in on the database input connections. Okay, now it's going to say cannot open because it's not finding it. It's going to ask for a display name. We're going to say this is RCN. This is what the on-screen display is going to show.
Correct.
When you go in. Video source, okay. We now tied it to the RCN cable that we created previously. Okay. External change command. If you've got an IR blaster and you got a cable box or a satellite box and you need to do the blasting part, you're going to need the script. You're going to have to put a script name in here for your blaster. Most common setups people have, they have blaster setups, and there are different scripts that you can use. I've seen Perl scripts. I've seen Python-based scripts. I've even seen Bash scripts, too. They all work. Just a little research, you know, go to the MythTV site and go through the wiki and see, you know, do a search on what kind of device you have, and you'll probably see some different examples. Also, the MythBone 2 wiki has some very good stuff in there, and also the NotMyth forum and wiki also has information too. My script is a Python script, so I'm going to call it. It's user bin change channel is my script. .py. Okay, preset channel.
If you are just recording over the line, you don't have an intermediary box from the cable company.
Right, you're not going to need this. Is only if you're connected to a cable box,
right,
and you need to change the channels on the cable box when you're recording's fire off. It needs to tell the cable box to change, go to channel whatever,
right,
to record that show.
The other case where you won't need it is if you are using FireWire capture, because it does all the channel changing right over the FireWire cable. You don't need to have an external script. There are ones out there if you want, but you don't need to have it.
Right. Okay. Next thing is preset tuner to channel. This is really for your cable box. I'm going to set it to channel C, channel 3. Okay. If you're doing a cam setup here for you know, digital video capture card, you would do a scan in here, and it would go out, and it would probe any of the frequencies that are coming into the card, and it would generate a listing of channels that
right.
you would have to do. Cam is a real pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. I think we might cover that in another episode.
Yeah,
maybe we'll do
yeah.
a screencast. We'll do an example of how to resolve this.
Right.
And what you got to do basically is between you have to have a web browser opened up to say Schedules Direct, because you'll need those XML IDs,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll need to open up the MythWeb interface and go in and look at your channel setup in there, and you'll actually need to resolve the cam frequency and XML IDs in that table.
Right.
To
and
do
you'll,
it.
You'll notice things like...
It's a very tedious
yeah.
process. This with a PVR-150, it's very simple. It's
yeah.
very straightforward.
And you'll notice things with the cam card for 1 second. You'll notice things like the channel is like 92 pound 3. You know, it's not going to be a normal channel number that you
yeah, it's really
actually,
bizarre.
You actually have to go in and then map that. Like I recently did this for my setup. I just took whatever the standard, like for instance ABC high definition is 180 on my box.
Right.
So I just created a channel in the 800 range that's equivalent. So I have an 880 in there that originally was like 92 pound 3 that and I just added the XML TV ID to it, and it knows that it's an ABC high definition channel, and it goes. And
let's save it for that episode,
yeah.
so we can really
yeah.
go into detail. We're gonna
yeah.
finish this off. Next is asking for create a new group input group. You could just go with the defaults in here. Okay, channel entered if you wanted to go in and change the channels that you have set up. And
again,
then,
that's more for the cam capture.
Yeah.
The standard ones over your line aren't necessarily gonna.
Storage directories. What do you think about storage directories?
You have to go in and set up storage directories. It creates one by default, but it prompts you when you go to exit out of here if you don't create, for instance, a live TV group, a DV backups group.
So you need to do both of these.
Yeah. So I usually, by default, Mythbuntu is going to create everything under, you know, var lib, MythTV.
So if you want to change it to a different directory, you got to point it in here?
No, create one. I create like a recordings directory. I create.
What do you call it?
Add new directory. Say /var/lib/MythTV. /say live TV, for instance, and hit OK, and then back one, escape. Yeah. Now go down and create a DB backups group. There you go. And I just, you know, I think I called it, you know, /var/lib/mythtv/data.
See, I didn't have to do this with Linux recently.
Yeah, I think that this is one piece that could be done automatically.
Okay.
Now,
so
one thing that you'll find here too is when you go to exit out of this, it's going to say it doesn't know what these directories are. So I had to manually go in and create these directories.
All right.
So you're going to.
So
we're
done here, pretty much.
Yeah, we're done here. So
we're going to hit escape.
Yep, you're going to hit escape. Now this is where it's going to tell you these directories don't exist. You want to fix them? Say yes. Then you got to Alt+F to open up terminal and create those directories.
Okay, we're gonna get out of here for this. For this purposes, we're gonna get out of here.
Right.
So that's basically it. Now it should do a reboot now.
Mm-hmm. It's going to eject the disk and then do a reboot.
Now it's going to ask you if you want to run Mythfield database. In the real world situation, you would say yes.
Yes.
And what would happen is you'll see a terminal window open up, and then you'll see a whole bunch of data come through. It'll go out and it'll connect to Schedules Direct, and it'll start importing your programming information. I'm going to hit cancel for now. And that's pretty much the basic setup.
That process does take quite a while to do.
Yeah,
not
we're not
going to
sit here.
Like 20 minutes.
Yeah,
15, like
20.
That.
The first
yeah.
time you do it, it takes a while.
Yeah, it's got to get everything. So.
Yeah, let's do a restart, see what happens. It's for shits and giggles. And it's doing a reboot. It's shutting down, and it's going to restart. Obviously, this would have went a little quicker if it was in a real system. It seemed like the longest thing was just copying everything and doing the install.
Right.
So that's pretty much just the basic setup. So if you know your hardware is supported, it's got a nice listing of supported devices. It's not too shabby at all.
And if Ubuntu supports it, this most likely will support it. So.
Ooh, that looks nasty. Something's puking within the virtual machine.
It might, you know what that might be? That might be you only gave 12 gigabytes of space to it.
Please remove the disc and close the tray and press enter.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can eject the CD and then I'll restart it. You're not seeing this. I'm doing this on my machine on another virtual session. Okay, it spit it out. Let's go back into the... There we go. Now it's booting up. Because we're doing it in a virtual machine, it's probably a little flaky. Okay, it's booting
up. I can attest that it does work. It does work pretty nice.
It seems very simple.
Yeah. I typically don't go through setting everything up in the live session. What I normally do is, and when I do this, is I will run through it to the point where I get to that last screen where it says to run the Myth TV setup or run, you know, schedule direct setup, that type of thing. I just at that point kill it, get in and start my first, do my first card, get all that stuff situated, set up all my inputs, set up all the grabbers for the XML data, and you're pretty well set up and ready to go.
Again, this is a little slow because it's inside a virtual machine. What's going on? Black screen. It looks like it's going back into the setup because it's not really seeing capture cards.
Yeah.
Let's just get out of this. So that's that. We're going to stop the screencast. So that's the basic setup to do the installation. Because we didn't have any capture cards, it's not finding them.
Right.
Because we're doing it instead of a virtual machine. I guess we should set up a test box. So if somebody wants to send us a test box, we could actually do something a little more realistic in real world.
Right.
So, but for all intents and purposes, it works. If you're going with hardware that's well supported, it should be pretty straightforward. Okay, we stopped the screencast, so that's that. Let me hit a save. Yeah, what this thing is doing now, it's going and taking all those files and it's resolving them.
It seems pretty quick.
Yeah, this is actually a very nice program. I'm using a demo recorder to do the screencast, which is it's actually a proprietary program. But I've had this for a while, and it works pretty well. I know there's other open source ones that people use.
You may get some hate mail about that now, too.
Yeah, I use Demo Recorder because we had the guy on the tech show a couple of years back, and he charged me so much to do it. He actually gave us a discount. It's a little slow because it was doing actual VirtualBox inside the Demo Recorder app. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird. So that's basically that. So... It's pretty simple. Get it going.
Right. Any of these distros, I believe, you know, Linhess, Mythdora, you know, Mythbuntu. They all provide very similar functionality. And I believe we'll run through some of those other ones in later episodes. But they try to make it as easy as possible for you. The real goal is to really set up an appliance. You know, set it and forget it. And be done with it. You know, obviously we go and we tweak things here and there and we try to do things differently with it, but we will, you know, it is a great, you know, base to go with instead of having to run through. I mean, like I think we said a few episodes back, it literally used to take like a weekend or whatever
everything
that we just did here. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, a basic setup is very simple. You know, it's nothing too complicated, especially if you're just doing something well supported, like a PVR150 card. You know, we'll go to CAM, and really, it's the whole thing with CAM, it's very tedious.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very tedious.
Yep.
And because you got to manually go into the table and resolve the frequency IDs and that nonsense.
Yep.
But once you get it set up, it's the type of thing where, you know, it's set up and it's done.
Yep.
And, that's that. So we're getting on towards an hour here. So I think we're going to wrap it up for now. Any thoughts, Dan? Anything for next time? What do you want to cover?
I'll think of something.
Want to do CAM? We'll go into a CAM
setup? We can definitely
do
CAM. I think I have that process pretty well down pat now at this point.
Yeah, I've done it a couple times, and that's one thing that I think could be improved upon, some kind of a automatic configuration setup with those things.
Yeah.
The whole thing with CAM is that it's different for every area that people are in. So someone in New York or Pennsylvania is going to have a completely different setup than someone who's in, say, you know, Toronto, Canada, or California. And it's very specific to your area, you know, what channels that you're able to get. Are you going over the air? Are you going over the cable company? You know, so that's the thing. And to automate a script, I think you would have to create we have to have a database, basically, of all the different areas.
Yeah, definitely.
It would be pretty laborious to get it going. I mean, it's doable. Anything technical like that is doable. It's just somebody actually has to go and do it.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have to get contributors to go in and have all the populated information for each area.
Right.
So
Think of the OpenStreetMap project where they got people everywhere all over.
That's a great
the world.
Project. By
yeah,
the way.
It is. They're everywhere, all contributing to that. We need somebody to do that for Cam.
Yeah, I think so. That's basically that. So we're going to wrap it up. You know, thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate, you know, taking the time to listen to us.
Send us your feedback. We enjoy getting it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can send us emails, pat@mittvcast.com.
I'm Dan at mittvcast.com.
Yep. And
we're both on Twitter.
And I'm on Identica. You should get on Identica too.
Yeah, I'm going to set that up.
Doesn't cost anything. Get on Identica. You can install Gwibber, and when you post through Gwibber, it goes to both automatically.
It goes to both of them automatically?
Yeah, and you'll receive both through there. Gwibber's a great app. I like
that. Okay, you'll have to check that one out then.
So there's another one, too, for KDE, too. I forget the name of it, but they're both good. And that's pretty much it. We're going to wrap it up. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Take care.
See you.